This is Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Most states have a traditional insanity defense. It's not used often, less than 1% of felony defendants. But four states do not have it at all. Three of those are right here in our region. But as the Mountain West News Bureau's Madeline Beck reports, a Supreme Court case could change that.
The Supreme Court decision could affect people like Timmy Kinner. Here he is talking to a judge last month in Idaho.
Good afternoon, Mr. Kinner.
Good evening. How you doing, ma'am?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Kinner faces the death penalty. Last year, on a warm Saturday evening in Boise, he walked into the birthday of a family. In a random attack, he stabbed nine people there, including the birthday girl, Ruya Kadir, who died. She was just 3 years old. There's a gag order on the trial, so information is sparse, but we know the judge found that Kinner was not mentally competent to stand trial until recently.
Because the court has determined that you are competent to proceed in this matter, I am going to take the opportunity to rearrange you on the charges.
Idaho hasn't had an insanity defense since 1982. It was part of a nationwide uproar after John Hinckley Jr. was found not guilty by reason of insanity after attempting to assassinate President Ronald Reagan.
The president was not hit. He was pushed into his limousine and immediately taken away to safety. However, three persons were hit.
In response, many states narrowed people's ability to use the traditional insanity defense. But Idaho, Utah, and Kansas went a step further. They followed a decision Montana had already made back in the 70s. Eliminate it altogether. Instead, those states adopted a different approach, the mens rea defense. That says if you knowingly kill a person, you can be charged. It doesn't matter if mental illness has affected your ability to know the difference between right and wrong. That mens rea defense is at the heart of the case before the U.S. Supreme Court. It involves a Kansas man charged with murdering his ex-wife, her mother, and his two teenage daughters. His lawyers argue he has a major depressive disorder, which affected his actions.
6135, Collier versus Kansas.
In the opening arguments of the case, Justice Stephen Breyer repeatedly asked the attorneys for the state of Kansas to explain how the mens rea meets constitutional muster. He gave them a hypothetical based on an imaginary murder victim called Smith.
The first defendant thinks that Smith is a dog. The second defendant knows it's a person but thinks the dog told him to do it. Okay, what's the difference?
Theoretically, the difference is that under mens rea, the defendant can only use the defense if they think the person is a dog, because they didn't knowingly kill a person. But State Attorney Toby Kraus argued there's no clear answer. Instead, he pointed to the inconsistencies in states that use the traditional insanity defense.
I think the problem is that states have grappled with this, and they've made different moral judgments as to who is morally responsible.
Bottom line, he says there's just no consensus among those states on which tests to use or who should prove someone's insanity claims, the defendant or the state. But critics of Kansas's position say that at least the traditional insanity defense usually offers this.
I certainly think the jury deserves to hear expert testimony to make its decision.
That's Joel Dvoskin. He's talking about expert testimony on a defendant's history of mental illness. That's not guaranteed with a mens rea defense, though the judge can take it into account during sentencing. Dvoskin is a psychologist and a professor who helped run the forensic and correctional mental health system for New York State. He says the criminal justice system is not the place for the mentally ill.
If you believe in rehabilitation, you're fixing the wrong thing if you put them in prison. If you believe that, well, this will teach them a lesson not to do it again, that implies that they knew what they were doing was wrong.
And he says even if someone is found not guilty by reason of insanity, they're not getting off. They're held in a mental health facility until they're not a threat, possibly years longer than a prison sentence. Attorney generals in Utah, Montana, and Idaho refused to comment, but all were part of a brief that said states should have the power to establish their own type of insanity defense, including mens rea. The Supreme Court ruling is expected between now and June. For alleged criminals like Timmy Kinner in Idaho, that ruling has significant consequences. His trial is set to start early 2021, and he's facing the death penalty. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Madeline Beck.
And in part two of our series, Madeline looks at how Idaho and Utah are thinking about how an insanity defense would affect their states.
Utah Representative Carol Spackman Moss is on a mission. She wants to get the insanity defense back in her state.
Presented a bill last session. The Judiciary Committee thought it was such a big idea and a big change that we should have further study. So we're preparing another bill for this session.
For Moss, it's personal. A man who grew up on her street in Holiday, Utah, murdered his parents. Moss knew Robert Lydiard and his family well, including Robert's struggles with mental illness. He worked as a nurse, but had stopped taking the medications that controlled his mental illnesses, including schizophrenia and bipolar disorders.
And on a Saturday morning, he killed his parents and called his sister and said, "I had to kill Mom and Dad because Satan was in them."
After the murders, he was sent to jail to await his trial.
His delusions were worse. He wasn't given his regular medication. He was diabetic, didn't have an insulin pump that worked, and he became catatonic. They had him in solitary, and he was dying.
So he was moved to a state hospital, where he's now waiting to be deemed competent enough to stand trial. Utah, Idaho, Montana, and Kansas are the only four states without a traditional insanity defense. If a defendant knowingly kills a person there, even if they're psychotic at the time, they can't be found not guilty by reason of insanity. However, the judge can take their mental illness into account during sentencing. Mark Moffitt is on Moss's committee looking into bringing back the insanity defense to the state.
And we are in the process now of redrafting some legislation.
Moffitt is a criminal defense attorney. He says in some states, people can plead guilty and mentally ill. They may serve some time in a hospital, but once they reach a certain point in treatment, they can be sent back to prison. Moffitt wants to change that.
Is it good criminal justice policy to punish people for crimes that they commit when they are incapable of discerning the difference between right and wrong?
He doesn't think so. Neither do the lawyers representing a Kansas defendant accused of murdering his ex-wife, two daughters, and mother-in-law. His case is the one before the Supreme Court. If justices rule against the state and in his favor, they could set a baseline insanity defense that every state has to have. Idaho's attorney general isn't happy about that. And at least one of the state's hospital administrators is concerned about how an insanity defense would be applied.
For those who might have received a long sentence based on the nature of the crime, how long would they be required to stay in a hospital?
I meet up with James Price at the State Hospital South in Blackfoot, Idaho. Price tells me about a third of the 90 or so adult patients are waiting to be found competent to stand trial. He takes me to one of the hospital wings. On the outside, it's pretty nondescript. Inside, there's a fish tank up against the blue cinder block wall and festive fall decorations. A nursing station sits at the front, and male and female patients are wandering around.
Probably 90% or more of the patients who are committed in a criminal case are restored to fitness, and so they end up returning back to jail to proceed with their criminal case.
But Price wants to make a point. His hospital isn't a prison. Criminally committed patients there are treated like civilly committed patients, which means they aren't usually locked in their rooms.
If we use seclusion and restraint, it has to be on a very limited basis, only to address a particular incident, and can only last for as long as needed to make the environment safe.
So he says if the law changes, they may have to treat more patients in dangerously ill states. While that's often temporary, he worries it could put staff and other patients at risk. He's also concerned about having the room.
We've always had a waiting list, and we give those who are committed in the criminal cases highest priority for admission.
Whether he has to deal with any of these concerns largely comes down to that Supreme Court case. It's expected to make its decision by early summer at the latest. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Madeline Beck.
And up next, we look at online educational tools. I'm Gemma Gaudet. This is Idaho Matters.